From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's May the 21st, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. And a bit later in the program, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, the Grocery Manufacturers Association may very well blame ethanol for high food prices. And that is just the beginning of ethanol's woes in Washington, D.C. EPA has opened a 30-day comment period on rolling back the RFS contained in last year's energy bill. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and many more ag news stories. And then I'll remind you about that 153.9 national average corn yield USDA predicted earlier in the month. And we'll hear from Darrell Good on why he was skeptical of the figure even on the same day it was released. Oh, and don't forget that later in the program, Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City will join us. That'll happen as we finish up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL AM 580, public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. In the nearby contract for wheat, July futures down 6 cents at $7.78 for the soft red. September $7.93, 6 lower. And December contract down 4.5 cents at $8.14. In contrast, July corn gained 17.5 cents, up 17.5 at $6.07 and a quarter. September at $6.19 and 3 quarters, 17.5 higher. December up 17.5 at $6.33 and a half. And the March corn at $6.46 and a quarter, up 17.5. July soybean futures, $13.49, up 17.5. The August contract, $13.52 and a half, up 18 and a quarter. And September futures, $13.52 and a half, up 26 and a quarter. November beans, 29 and a quarter cents higher at $13.55 even. July soybean meal at $3.32.50, down a dollar. July bean oil at $63.25, $2.22 higher. June live cattle, $94.62 and a half, 100 weight up 97 and a half cents. August at $99.55, up 102 and a half, and the feeders fed traded the May contract 12 and a half cents higher today at $108 and a nickel, and the June lean hogs at $76.50 were down 5 cents on the afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Outside markets now look like this afternoon. Crude oil futures jumping into new contract highs again today in a big way today at $133.25, now up $4.27 a barrel in the nearby July contract. August futures for the crude oil at $133.69, up $4.44. June ethanol futures up 5 2/10 cents at $2.53 and 3 tenths. July at $2.51 and a half. They're up 5 4/10 cents. Natural gas trading the June contract at $11.65 and 8 cents, up 29 3/10 cents for the day for the June contract. And the heating oil trading the June at $3.91, just about 13 1/2 cents higher for the day. Propane at $1.75 is up 1 5/10 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average stands now at 12,617. Down a right at 211 points for the day, and gold futures are trading the May contract at $928 an ounce, up $8.50. The CRB index at 433.91 is up 6.68 on the afternoon. Here's what the forecast looks like for the two-state region. And Mike Solis says in Indiana, mostly clear skies tonight. In Illinois, clear, partly cloudy early, then increasing cloudiness with widely scattered showers arriving in southwestern Illinois overnight. Lows will range this evening from 40 in northwestern Illinois to around 50 in the far southern part of Indiana. Tomorrow, Mike says, increasing cloudiness, some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms, mainly in central Illinois and southern sections. Highs will range from 53 in the north to 72 in the southwestern part of Illinois. The extended highlights, dry weather will return to the area for the weekend after showers and some isolated thunderstorms. Focus on the western and southern sections Thursday and Friday. Most of the rain totals will remain below an inch, except in areas that receive some of the heavier thunderstorms.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Boy, new contract highs in crude oil and a 17-cent gain in both the corn and the soybeans. Tell me about it.
Well, there's a lot of news, and of course, the first one was last night I filled 2 5-gallon cans of diesel fuel up for my riding lawnmower tractors. They told me when I drove up to the pump, the $4.50 a gallon caught my attention, but they said you're going to have to pay for it before we fill your tank, sir. So two $20 bills being slapped down on the table and walking away from the station, and I do notice people driving slower down the road. Of course, we had the Fed minutes today talking about no more interest rate cuts. We had the veto of the farm bill, and, of course, the energy rally today with crude oil last trading up $4.65 at $133.64. Congress was going to give the large oil companies executives a talking to, but the market completely surged that off and ran up. And, of course, corn, soybeans, crude soybean oil are all energy-related, and the market surged on heavy volume. We have been picking up throughout, our friends in other areas of more corn being planted, particularly in Iowa, that they say could rival last year's large acreage, and a lot of corn being replanted in the south half of Illinois. But when it's all said and done, the market surged to higher levels, Todd.
You know, maybe we better talk about the farm bill just very quickly because the President of the United States did veto the farm bill. It didn't take long for farm organizations and other organizations to gather up some steam. Of course, this was pretty much a veto-proof farm bill as it passed by enough majority in both the House and the Senate that they'll probably take care of it. I think the House is scheduled first to take up an override vote. 1,054 organizations, Paul, got on the line to Congress today and asked them to override the bill. The president, of course, vetoing the Food Conservation and Energy Act of 2008 this morning. There's widespread support for this farm bill from a wide coalition, farm, conservation, commodity groups, specialty crop, nutrition and hunger, and consumer groups, cooperatives, religious organizations, all sorts of things, and organizations in line to push Congress to pass the bill. I suppose the president believes it's more spending than he wants, and maybe as much of a political ploy for the presidential race, I suspect, as anything at this time. I don't know that you'll want to talk about that, but maybe you can roll into what we see in Chicago and what this bill contains in conservation and does not contain, as well as in the CRP that you think it might and should contain in order to make sure that Chicago continues to trade in a way that is beneficial to farmers.
Well, also catching the political spectrum is some people are basically wanting to introduce a legislation about over-speculation and controlling that as far as, energy is concerned. I think politically it's going to be overridden. And also there is something there, I think, called the acreage price supports and acreage deal, which will help benefit these higher price levels for corn, soybean, and wheat farmers. And that should be very beneficial as far as, guaranteeing some higher price levels for the farmer and give them a safety net. That caught my eye. And, hopefully people can get along with this new farm bill and make it happen.
And the new portions of the farm bill will allow producers to help insure themselves at a higher safety net level. They'll pay for part of that, I suppose. But the old farm bill really doesn't work when you have input costs that are as high as they are, especially, and we all know that because every time we fill our tanks up, and fertilizer, of course, is energy intensive in its development and costs a lot because of that. The safety net that farmers across the nation use probably needs to be higher at its lower levels, too.
Well, number one, we don't want anybody to beat up on the American farmer.
No.
You know, he's a wonderful person, and with these higher prices, he does deserve some safety. And the other factor here is it's not only food but energy, and, of course, that's what some people are very concerned about with these high energy prices. He's doing probably everything he can to produce as much corn and soybeans as humanly possible and help stabilize these runaway prices because of energy-related transportation, energy-related costs of production, and hope it'll help stabilize the economy in years to come.
Okay, so back to the back pocket issues for producers then. A 17.5-cent jump in corn and beans today. Anything of note in the trade in the bean pit? I saw that we have an inverse at one point in the bean pit today. With the
We're having major problems with Argentina. They have a runaway inflation problem. Their currencies are getting quite weak. The typical Argentine citizen is dumping pesos and buying U.S. dollars for stability. South American citizens of Argentina understand inflation and basic economic problems related to government policy probably as well as any country in the world. It's not very popular what the government's trying to do as far as taxing soybean and corn and wheat farmers. They're also putting in provisions to limit exports out of their country. And, of course, as one of the top producers of corn, soybeans, and wheat in the world, that's putting the brakes on pretty hard. I think the other factor here that we're looking at is, of course, the Brazilian economy is booming, and they're putting their recent wealth, of course, into sugarcane expansion and ethanol expansion and helping with energy in that country. And at the same time, there is a feeling that there's only going to be a small increase in soybean acres in the future. So if we have maybe more acres planted to corn, the arithmetic is pretty simple that we probably have less soybeans planted here in the U.S., and it doesn't take too much of a mathematical genius to know that means higher prices on U.S. soybeans because of the small carryover of old crop and new crop beans. So we probably are going to have pretty good prices on corn and soybeans here in the U.S. for the next year. That goes against a lot of philosophies and a lot of market positions and market positions with a lot of people, but you know, have to face reality, and with high-priced energy, that's also a supporting factor.
Thanks much, Paul. We'll
have a profitable day, Todd.
Mm-hmm. All right, you too. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, joins us on the Closing Mark Report. That happens on Wednesday afternoons. If you get the opportunity and you'd like to hear what Paul has to say, you can visit our website and hear it again as an MP3 file, or simply sign up to hear it as a podcast. One note on those, we have as many listeners on the web for this show as we do on the air. And we have about four times as many listeners for Commodity Week. It's something we're very proud of. If you haven't tried a podcast out, give it a shot at WILLAG.org.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Lernard Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Lernard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
Our own director of ag programming at WILL is here now, Dave Dickey, with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the Grocery Manufacturers Association is considering ramping up a public relations campaign arguing corn-based ethanol is responsible for higher food prices, with an eye toward convincing lawmakers to roll back the renewable fuel standard. Senate Finance Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley is incensed about the GMA campaign and has written a letter of complaint to Grocery Association leadership. Meanwhile, USDA Secretary Ed Schaefer says it would be a mistake to reduce the RFS. The Environmental Protection Agency has begun a 30-day public comment period on a Texas request that would halve the 2008 RFS derived from grain. Texas Governor Rick Perry cited hardship, saying that increased production of ethanol is raising corn prices in Texas. The EPA says it intends to determine to what extent, if any, a waiver would change the demand for ethanol and affect corn or feed prices. Monday, Texas Senator Kay Bailey Hutchison introduced legislation to freeze the RFS for corn-based ethanol at this year's level of 9 billion gallons. Schaefer says a freeze would have no effect on food prices. Governmental officials in Thailand say the time may have come to form a rice cartel to control world prices. Possible partners in the export control idea include Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos. A rice cartel likely would not be World Trade Organization compliant. The WTO has been very critical of national single-desk sellers. WTO head Pascal Lamy says new draft papers on agricultural and industrial goods have clarified remaining obstacles to agreement in the Doha round of world trade talks. Lamy says the drafts identify where there's agreement and where more negotiation is necessary. USDA says it will end all exceptions to the Downer rule for cattle. Under the proposal, the Food Safety and Inspection Service will issue a rule stating that USDA inspectors will no longer allow cattle to be slaughtered that have injuries or had passed a pre-slaughter inspection only later to become immobile. And South Korea and the U.S. are clashing over resumption of U.S. beef exports. Seoul says it will not allow beef from animals more than 30 months old. The Bush administration says that flies in the face of a deal reached last month where cattle of any age could be imported to South Korea. South Korean citizens worried about mad cow disease have taken to the streets in protest, surprising the South Korean government. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL, public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website, the address, willag.org. That's WILLAG.org. Now, up next, you know USDA is predicting a very high corn yield for this season, despite the delayed planting progress. We'll remind you of how University of Illinois Extension ag economist Daryl Good sees that very high yield prediction. The United States Department of Agriculture is predicting farmers will harvest 153.9 bushels to the acre for its national average corn crop this year. University of Illinois Extension ag economist Daryl Good says that figure sounds awfully high to him.
Well, it does. You know, in my mind, the USDA's balance sheet, including the yield forecast, raises more questions than it answers at this point. They're suggesting that yields nationally would average just a bit under 154 this year, 153.9. They start with a higher trend yield than I would use, but do trim that a little bit because of late planting here. So the question in my mind is if planting delays trim that yield expectation further, and if the starting trend number was too high, what if we're looking at 150, even 151 bushels rather than 154? All of a sudden, there's a 300 million bushels difference in production.
A 300 million bushel cut in U.S. corn production that Daryl Good says would, by necessity, have to cause a contraction in corn usage, a contraction even larger than already forecast by USDA.
Which leads to the second set of interesting questions. USDA forecasting an 850 million bushel cut in corn feeding, a 400 million bushel cut in exports for the year ahead, thinking on the export side that the rebound in world wheat production will provide more competition for corn. The question on feed use is, have we already started that rationing process with cuts in livestock numbers, or will it take further price increases to get the kind of cut that's being forecast?
The University of Illinois ag economist says USDA makes the balance sheets work for next year in several ways. First, he says the corn yield estimate is optimistic. Secondly, the agency has predicted a tremendous cut in use. And both, says Good, were used to bring the 08-09 ending stocks in at what is considered a minimum pipeline number. That is to say, enough corn left over to make it to the fall of 2009 without running out. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon, and Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana, joins us today. Good afternoon to you, Kay.
Good afternoon to you, Todd.
It's a beautiful day. Farmers are, I suspect, not hauling a lot of corn today, but they're in the field, aren't they there?
No, we're still awfully wet. There was a farmer that just left here, and his son is planting a few beans today, but it's awful sticky out there, and this is sand ground that he's on. So there's really not a lot of people rolling yet. Maybe in the next day or two there will be, but we're still dumping quite a bit of stuff here at the elevator because they still can't get back in the field yet.
Does it mean that your basis remains sloppy?
It's still sloppy. I mean, the SIF basis is worse, and the interior basis is kind of getting a little bit worse. And, yeah, demand has really backed off. And so, you know, of course, we take to the ethanol plant over at Cloverdale, and that's kind of helped, you know, prop it up a little bit. But basis levels are just pretty sloppy. This whole marketplace is just kind of turned upside down, really.
Yeah, your train value's not so great as well going to the southeast?
No. Now even the new crop basis levels have slipped again because they improved a lot, and I think there was a lot of trains being sold. So even your June-July slot and your new crop slot's just a little bit weaker. Yeah, the basis is just sloppy all the way around. Now, if we really find out somewhere down the road that this crop might be in a little trouble, we're going to shave some yield off, then that may turn things around. But for right now, it's just... if the corn market is just struggling, if it wasn't for the board, the basis sure isn't helping any, that's for sure.
Yeah, how much do you expect you'll lose in basis given the 17.5-cent gain in both the corn and the beans today?
Really, believe it or not, all the up and down in the market hasn't seemed to affect the basis as much as it used to. I know it used to affect it a lot, but really all the volatility that we've seen hasn't affected train values really hardly one iota, because we've been sitting here at 30 under on cash corn for the last week and a half or 2 weeks.
Okay, so we know you were buying corn. How about soybeans? Anybody have anything left or a new crop that they were making sales on?
No. I mean, I'm buying just a little bit of stuff off DP if a guy needs a little money. And, you know, there seems to be a little bit more interest in booking corn. Now, they're a little bit more afraid of that for some reason. But beans, they're going to wait. They're just absolutely willing to wait. So I'm buying very, very little. They've got their cash needs taken care of. So they're just going to wait and see what this market does, because there's no doubt there's going to be a lot of volatility down the road.
Your bids for the day.
All right, cash corn is 577, and cash beans are 1324, and wheat is 568.
And Kay, I know next week is your last week with us here on the air. It's your last week with me because I'm taking vacation next week. I can't tell you, but it's a thrill that I've been able to work with you for, well, I guess for a very long time now, and certainly over the last 4 years. Thank you for all you've done for us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure working with you, Todd, and have a great vacation next week.
You too. And you have good retirement. Thanks, Kay.
Thank you very much.
Kay Whitlock is with Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Back in 2 minutes with the Ag Weather. I'm Todd Gleason.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Former Bolingbrook police officer Drew Peterson has turned himself into authorities on a weapons charge. Peterson attorney Joel Brodsky says the charge involves a gun seized after Stacy Peterson disappeared in October. Peterson has been named a suspect in his wife's disappearance. Brodsky says police claim the gun's barrel was too short under Illinois law. Former state police investigator Mike Callahan says his superiors transferred him when he complained about being told to drop a murder investigation that initially showed a politically connected man as a person of interest. A federal jury in Urbana awarded damages to Callahan, but yesterday an appeals court reversed that award, citing a Supreme Court decision limiting the First Amendment rights for government employees. Callahan's investigations helped lead to the release of two men convicted of the 1986 murders of Dyke and Karen Rhodes of Paris, Illinois. The Illinois House has begun debating its proposal for next year's state budget. House Democrats are pushing for votes on funding for a variety of state needs, such as education and health care. But Senate Democrats are preparing their own budget plan that could be more modest than what the House supports. Lawmakers are trying to wrap up a budget and other work by May 31st. Firefighters in Terre Haute say the Harvey's Formal Wear building is a total loss after a fire broke out there early yesterday. The owner of Harvey's says the fire destroyed about 3,000 tuxedos and 200 wedding gowns. Apartment residents in the building all escaped safely. The cause of the fire is not yet known. Dakin Williams, who ran for the Democratic nomination for Illinois governor and senator in the 1960s and 70s, died yesterday at age 89 in Belleville. The former Metro East federal prosecutor was the younger brother of playwright Tennessee Williams. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner. He's the senior agricultural meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the weather in the Midwest, and maybe rather than starting with the current things, let's start with what the forecast is for the longer term. I think the National Weather Service has developed a 60 and 90 days forecast. Is that right?
Well, they did. To be honest with you, I don't pay a lot of attention, though, because they don't seem to fill in the blanks good enough for me.
Okay, well, what's your view of the 60 to 90 in that case?
All right. It looks like for the month of June, let's start there and go forward. In the month of June, it looks like we will be looking at a warmer-than-usual bias in temperatures for the central and southern plains and the southwest Corn Belt. This will extend as far to the north as Iowa and parts of Illinois, and from there back into Nebraska, Kansas, and the southern plains down in Texas. It will include the Delta. That's warmer-than-usual weather for the month of June. It will be cool, though, in the easternmost parts of the Midwest. Ohio is southward into the southeastern states. Parts of Michigan will also be somewhat on the cool side. And as far as precipitation in the month of June, we're probably looking at below-average amounts for a fair amount of the lower Midwest, from Ohio back to southeastern Nebraska and southward into the Gulf Coast region. It'll be wet across the northern plains and the uppermost portions of the Mississippi River Basin. In the month of July, we're looking for a cooler-than-usual bias for the eastern half of the Corn Belt. This will be most areas near and east of the Mississippi River. We'll look for warm weather out there in the majority of the central and southern plains. And precipitation during the month of July will probably be below average in the central and southern plains, again catching the southwestern portion of the Corn Belt, extending as far to the north as central Iowa and western Illinois. So from central Iowa and western Illinois back into the central and southern plains will be drier than usual in the month of July. And we'll probably be looking at near normal precipitation in the rest of the Midwest with a wet bias in the far northwestern U.S. plains. As far as the August outlook is concerned, we're probably reaching too far out into time to have much confidence, but at the moment it looks like it'll probably be, again, warm in the plains and a little bit on the cool side in the easternmost portions of the Midwest, with some timely showers and thunderstorms expected in the eastern Midwest. We'll probably also start seeing an increase in tropical cyclone activity in the southeastern corner of the country, with a great increase in precipitation likely at that point in time.
And maybe you'd better tell us what you think is going to happen in the next week here in the Midwest, too.
Well, it certainly looks like we've got a large storm system in the plains that will be prevailing through the weekend, and it will eventually bring widespread precipitation back across the eastern Corn Belt. But until about Monday, we're probably not going to see a lot of precipitation except for some scattered showers real briefly Thursday into Friday. The precipitation is not likely to be heavy. It might set back field work for a brief period of time, but we will need to see a little bit more precipitation evolve before we really have to worry about any kind of problem with field progress. So in other words, we should see some pretty good weather in the eastern half of the Midwest. The western areas will be a little on the wet side, especially hard red wheat country, and extending from there into parts of Minnesota and Iowa, where we'll have quite a bit of rainfall this coming weekend.
Drew, thanks much. And, hey, I'm looking forward to having you on the CME group with Steve Freed on, June the 12th, I think, Thursday, right?
That's right. That's right. I hope everyone will be able to tune in, and we'll be showing the long-range outlook for the summer.
Indeed, that's a webcast. Just email me at tgleason@uiuc.edu. I'll send you the link if you'd like. That is today's Closing Market Report. It's been Drew Lerner with World Weather Incorporated. I'm Todd Gleason. Have a good day.